Welcome to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on May 8th, 2013.
Hello, my friends. This is John, and I am happy to be here with you, happy to see you here. I really have absolutely nothing that I want to talk about this morning, so I'll talk about whatever you want to talk about, and in the meantime, we can just hang out here together. If you have something you want to talk to me about or you want me to speak about, just raise your hand, like Carla said. Good to see you here. Thank you for coming. Just for the few people that just arrived, I started by telling everybody here that I have nothing on my mind to say. I mean, I always have a lot that I could say, but I have nothing in particular that comes to mind that I really need to talk about or need to communicate. And also, the other part of it is that from my point of view, the main purpose of these Wednesday meetings is not for me to have anything to say or to find something to trigger responses and so forth. The main purpose of this is for me to just kind of shut up, except if you want to talk to me about something, or you want to ask me something or suggest something to me. This is these meetings I've always intended for them to be, to take the shape that you give them and not that I give them. That said, there's no need for us to talk about anything, and we can just stay here sort of virtually together until the hour is over. So don't feel pressured to say anything. But I don't feel pressured to say anything either, so happy to talk to you, love to talk to you. If you want to talk, raise your hand. I'm here. Clayton? Clayton, do you have your microphone?
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
I hear you very well, yes. No.
Hi, John. Question, or just, do things look any different when you look at yourself and you find yourself?
Well, that's kind of a big, a big tent there, but, this business about looking at yourself, the decision and the effort and the determination just to get a brief glimpse of what it feels like to be you. That's what the looking is. It's an attempt to get the briefest, most fleeting flicker of a taste of what it feels like to be you. Sometimes you can try to do that and have no sense of having succeeded whatsoever. What we're trying to get a look at is something that's not very interesting. It doesn't have much to call attention to itself. So the act of looking itself is a very small thing. And the effect of that has nothing whatsoever to do with transformation of anything at all, including the nature of your life and the nature of the things and the experiences and the relationships that you have with your life. What the act of looking does is change the context in which the entire experience of life is experienced. The context prior to the looking, for pretty much all of us, is a context that is that has as the, its fundamental assumption that life is something that needs to be that you need to be protected from, that life is something to be afraid of, that life is something to escape from, to find some relief from the constant experience of life as it unfolds. And what happens when that, and that's that context which we, which I call the fear of life, that context determines everything about the way that we are able to experience and understand the unfolding of life over time in our own, in ourselves. When that context is changed, what happens is not that you see something new, or there's some new great understanding, or some new deep insight that solves everything and settles everything once and for all. What happens as a result of the context of fear being destroyed is that the pretense that you can hold life at arm's length, that you can escape from it, or transform it, or keep it away from you, that pretense just goes away. So that what we get at the end of the day is the direct, raw experience of human life as a human being, just as it actually is. And it turns out that, against all expectation, it is precisely that that satisfies us, as nothing else does, as no states have ever been able to, as no acquisitions have ever been able to, as nothing whatsoever has been able to, that direct and sometimes really hard and complicated moment-by-moment experience of the actuality of being alive here is all that satisfies us. It's the thing that makes life worth living, so to speak. So, what we have come to understand here and what we've come to see is that people look, they go through a period in which it can be very difficult and rocky and confusing and painful even, and at the end of that they end up in just without immersed, totally immersed in the unfolding of the experience of life as a human being. Does that answer any of that question?
I think it answers most of that question, yeah. It was just that you mentioned having a glimpse. I had a glimpse a couple of weeks back. And, but for a moment, but it was only for about a minute and a half, that, it was kind of like, oh, this is it. And, but everything was it. But I would, but I would say that that wasn't some sort of an experience because, you know, it went away. I understand. It's a lot of times it feels like I am trying to, well, always, almost, trying to do something with my life.
Change it, you mean?
Well, to change it, or I feel like I'm on a... Maybe not escape from it, but it's as though it, something has to be done with it.
Transcend it.
Maybe not transcend it, but something has to be done with it. I have to become something, or I have to...
Right. Okay.
You know, be somebody, or...
But see, here's the thing, Clayton, and those ideas are obviously bogus and have no consequence. But the thing is that those ideas themselves are effects of the underlying context that is the fear of life itself.
Yeah.
We come into this world, we are struck by the horror of the entry into this world, and we shrink from our lives. And from that moment on, mm-hmm. the path is set. And the path is an endless attempt to either become something myself that will somehow make it all right for me, for this life to be, me to be living this life, or something will happen to the life that will make it more acceptable to me, or something will happen in a more metaphysical nature that will take me out of the experience of this life. And most of our lives are spent doing that. The thoughts that come, the ideas and the understandings and the relationships that come within that fog, that context of fear, those thoughts and understandings and relationships and ideas and so forth are contaminated and corrupted by the purpose mm-hmm. for which they came into being, which was to protect you from life, which itself is insane. So that when I say, look at yourself, and again, I don't know, we can maybe examine that a little bit if what I'm saying is what you're doing. Because when I say, look at yourself, I'm not asking you to do that in order that you can gain a better understanding of your nature. And I'm not asking you to do that in order to gain the understanding that you don't exist, or to anything whatsoever to happen to you as a result of doing that. And what I'm asking you to look at is not your true self or some version of yourself. I'm asking you to look at what feels like you, the person, what feels like you. Now, what you call me. Now, I'm not asking you to look at the array of personality that masquerades as the person you are. I'm asking you to look at the fundamental existence that you are, which itself is best described. And anything we say about you is a abstraction. But the mm-hmm. closest we can come is the personal pronoun. When I ask you to look at you, I'm asking you to look at what you call me. And you are always here. That's a fact. You are also pretty much lacking in any interesting characteristics, any taste, any color, any movement, any sound, anything whatsoever. The feel of you is the most subtle thing there is, the most uninteresting thing there is. It's the thing that is also the thing that the fear least wants you to look at, and can deploy a number of methodologies that keep you from doing that. For the most part, people who try to look, I don't know, I'm saying the most part, I'm not sure that's true, but for the most part, I suspect that people who try to look never actually get the taste. Maybe it's 50-50. Never actually consciously get the experience of the feel of you as a result of that attempt to do so. But I also think that everybody who tries to actually succeeds, whether they know it or not. But what I'm asking you to look at, Clayton, is mm-hmm. you, the you that's here. And what happens is that, usually what happens is that at best you get like a tenth of a second flash. And one of the ways in which people have done it, and what worked for me, was to try to remember something that happened in the past. It's best if it's not a very dramatic event, just something ordinary life in the past. and remember it with sufficient clarity to be able to ask yourself at that time, what did it feel like to be you then? And it turns out that what it felt like to be you then is exactly, precisely the exact same thing as it feels to be you now.
That's interesting that you should say
that. Huh?
It's interesting that you should say that, John, because when I described what I'm going to call it an awakening moment, when prior to that, when that happened, I was thinking, I was reading something by a guy called Randall Friend. It's like a non-duality thing. And but I was remembering when I was a child and I was in a pram. I could remember being in a pram. And the pram was covered up with like a Perspex thing because it was raining. But I had the memory of being me. But me as I am now.
Yes, that's right.
And then I was thinking that, and then that's when I got this notion of, so I was thinking of the sperm and the egg question and the original cell and how that's not there anymore. And I might be overcomplicating this, but when did a soul or an entity actually, you know, come into the body? What happened was that I had this glimpse of like that everything, it wasn't, you know, fireworks or anything like that. It was just a glimpse that it seemed like everything, was what I would call it. Maybe, some people call it unconditional love, but I was calling it, I don't know, reality. But everything was it. Even the TV, even though it's made out of plastic, yeah. That was it.
Let me interrupt you a minute, okay?
Yeah.
The fact that everything is it is beside the point.
Okay.
It's simply the case. And really, it's just simply the case. It has no consequence to see that. It feels good and so forth. But there's no consequence in understanding that.
Okay.
That's obviously the case once the distance between you and your life is closed. It's just the case. Now, but it sounds to me, and this is really interesting. Excuse me a second. I've got pollen problems here. This is really interesting because what I think happened is that when you did that, this is really amazing, that you actually did look at yourself. Now, that's what happened. If you can look at what it felt like to be you back there in the rain or whatever it was, and see that that's the same, then you've looked at yourself. Now, that's happened to other people prior to me and the people that work with us here. And that's happened with other people over all the thousands of years that we human beings have been so dissatisfied with the idea of being human beings.
Yeah.
And the context in which that occurs is critical. Because if the context in which it occurs is spiritual or religious or philosophical, then the mind, the present mind, which has been formed in order to protect you from the direct experience of life, goes there to understand what's just happened.
Okay,
which is what gives rise to the whole corpus of spiritual and religious and philosophical expression that comes from people who have genuinely had the experience and genuinely lost that underlying fear, but have no idea how it happened. And the only idea that comes to them about how it happened comes to them from the context in which they were operating at the time that the looking occurred. Well, if it's religious, it'll be a religious explanation and a religious attempt, an attempt using religious methodologies and understandings to teach people how to get there. If it's a context of spiritual aspiration, it'll be the work of spiritual enlightenment that people try to understand and explain to others how to get what they have. And same with philosophy and all the other things.
Mm-hmm.
But the only context that makes sense is that, and the reason it makes sense, I'm not saying it's the only context that makes sense. Everything makes sense. We can make sense of anything. But the only context that works is the context in which the effort to get a direct taste of what it feels like to be you occurs within a context that recognizes that within a context that is free of all of the prior ways of understanding and looking at and seeking and aspiring to that we have been on before. And right now, that's this context. You know, we have what we have seen here is that the only thing that matters, truly, there's that the whole universe of our existing mind, with all of its understandings and all of its clarity and confusion and all of its effectiveness and ineffectiveness and so forth, that whole personality comes undone after the looking. It just no longer has it no longer has a leg to stand on. And all of those ideas and understandings and points of view and relationships and so forth, all of our aspirations, all of the way we understand what's good and bad and what's true and false and everything, they just all begin to disintegrate. And that creates a period of some considerable distress and confusion. But in the end is as I have said, the end is the direct and immediate, continuous, unbroken experience of the wonder of human life unfolding with all of its complications and difficulties and rewards and everything that goes into human life, but now being experienced without the veil of fear that makes it impossible for us to be intelligent about what we do with our life, makes it impossible for us to be sane about living as a human being, and makes it impossible for us to really understand the few things we can do to affect how our life unfolds. And actually, so far as I can tell, the only thing that we have that we have any control over whatsoever, and our control over this is not complete or continuous, but the only thing we have anything to say about whatsoever is where we put our attention. And we begin to learn by practice and by applying normal human intelligence, uncontaminated by the fear. We begin to learn how the movement of attention, the deliberate movement of attention, can affect the unfolding of our lives. It can affect everything whatsoever. So did you follow that? And as far as
so
all
I,
the,
and are
as
you
far
saying,
as all, I'm sorry. As far as all the other things that we've done, spiritual, religious, philosophical, everything that we've done, trying to find relief over the thousands and thousands of years that we've been trying to find it, whatever there is useful within those activities. And there may be a great deal useful. Whatever is that useful within that will be approached with intelligence and clarity and sanity, and may even bear some fruit of its own.
Mm.
So it's not like everything is bad except this. It's more like there's nothing whatsoever that's bad. nothing whatsoever that is the cause of my misery. And that's what I mean by bad. Mm. There's nothing whatsoever that is the cause of my misery once that underlying context of fear is gone. Not anything. That's nothing causes my misery once that's gone. Misery is gone. Pain stays. You know, pain comes and goes as always. Mm. Pleasure comes and goes as always. All the things that come and go all the time continue coming and going, but there is no misery attached to them. Okay?
Is that because of, I don't know, in non-duality circles, you know, they speak about, you know, the loss of the self. There is no self. Is when this fear of life goes, is that like the sort of constructed conceptual self melting sort of thing? Do you know what I mean?
There's a lot of ways to explain the intricacies of the ideas that have come to us over the time. I have some considerable familiarity with Advaita teachings and,
yeah,
and Buddhist teachings and other teachings of that kind. And the only those teachings all occur and are very with great. They are created with great and true intention to be helpful and to really understand what's going on and so forth. But what happens is that when that effort occurs within the same mind that was formed by the fear of life, that was informed by the fear of life, the things that come to mind that could be explain what has happened are all twisted and contorted. And this thing about the self disappearing is one that's about there is no self, I am the mind, or there is no mind, I am the self, or there is no self, there's no me, there's no you, and so forth. This thing is it's not intentional. And it doesn't mean that I'm saying anything, dishonest in the efforts that have gone into this, because I don't see that at all. But what happens is that, like the thing with the there is no self and the self melts away, that sounds to me suspiciously like seeking to go back to sleep in the name of awakening. The entire array of theories about the true nature of self are replete with ideas that seem to me to be asking us to go back to sleep in the name of awakening. Samadhi states, and nothing wrong with samadhi states. Nothing. Samadhi states, the idea of transcendence, the idea that nothing exists, the idea that the entirety of the experience of life is inexistent. These are all ideas that serve nothing other than the continuation of the idea that the problem is my life, that the problem is what's happening in my life. And what I have to do is, and there's nothing I can do about that. What I have to do is find a place that I can be in which I am safe and protected from my life. And that's not explicit, but it strikes me as being implicit in a whole range of spiritual aspiration. So the actuality that might be the leg that they stand on with that is the fact that now, as I sit here with you now, speaking to you, I am completely, consciously aware of the feeling of me here, of me. I say the feeling of me to hook it to the looking. But I am completely aware of me here. That awareness of me never departs. And it's the same with you. It's the same with every human being whatsoever, that the awareness of me is always present in awareness, that me is always present in awareness. But when the fear is calling the shots, the presence of me is so faint and so subtle and so unimportant that I don't see it and I can't attend to it. That's what happens. And that can seem like, and the other thing that happens is that the whole psychology changes. The old psychology kind of falls apart and new psychological mechanisms in conformance with the normal way in which cause and effect shapes things, new psychological mechanisms come into being that are founded in fearlessness and sanity. It may be that the destruction of the old personality feels that way. It may be that it's just now obvious insignificance of the feel of me that produces that idea.
Do you think, John, do you think something that's sort of was like an idea and a feeling that that my emotions that happen are actually trying to communicate. There's sort of like a communication, but or my emotions think that they can communicate with the world and with the people around me. Is that linked in with the fear of me? It's almost like it was an insight, whether it was valid or not, I'm not sure, but it was like sometimes if you think the world around you or the people that you know are feeling your feelings, they're feeling your emotions.
Well, they are, and you're feeling.
Are they though? I don't know if they are.
Yeah, the boundary between human beings is extremely porous. That's why, no matter how much we have tried to stamp it out, that's why compassion is a natural human trait. Compassion means to suffer with, and it's a result of having the experience of other people's misery leak into to your local mind. That's what causes that. But listen, here's the thing, Clayton. No amount of insight or understanding is of any use, actually. Like the idea, I know, like, believe me, I know. The idea that if I could just understand it in a clear and simple way where everything would be explained and taken care of, then I'll be okay. That's just part of the neurotic mechanisms that are produced by the fear. The idea that thought forms can have any good effect or bad effect is part of the mechanism of the fear.
That's what I was trying to get at, I think.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Here's what I advise. First of all, you start from scratch. You are starting from scratch. You have done the act of looking. It's really apparent from our conversation about the experience of you in the past, right? You have done the looking. What you can expect is that, and I don't know how long ago that was or what's happened. in the meantime, but now that that looking is can be seen by you in its actual effect, you can begin now to learn how to live without it. And the way you learn how to live without it is like when you find yourself feeling confused or whatever it is that gives rise to the search for an understanding that will settle it and satisfy it, right? There's a mm-hmm. feeling state behind that. The mm-hmm. the idea that understanding will settle it is secondary. It appears mm-hmm. in reaction to that feeling state. You follow
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
And it's the fear mechanisms of fear trying to help you out and work with you. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced, and many people agree with me, that the only thing we really can do, and we can't, and I said this earlier, we can't do it all the time and we can't do it well until we practice at it. And that is, we can determine where to put our attention. You really have mm-hmm. to start at the ground level here. You will see, as time goes on, you'll see how all that fits in. And it's not anything like you think now. Mm-hmm. But you start with the assumption that you are embarking freshly upon the experience of being alive as a human being, and that everything that you thought you knew about how to do that is likely to be either entirely false or at least contaminated by the fear that has been working on it. So you say, okay, here's this feeling, here's this thing. If only I could understand that. And then you remember that that's the secondary thing, that all those thoughts are about a feeling state. Okay?
Yeah.
Then you deliberately and without malice or antagonism or anything at all like that, just simply for the fact of doing it, just to see if you can, you deliberately move your attention and put your attention for just a moment on the feeling state that this whole array of chatter is about. Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
You find that feeling state and just touch it with your attention. And then when you do that, you just, again, without any antagonism whatsoever, move your attention to your breath, which is the value of the breath is that it is uncomplicated, it's not a problem, it's just, it's physical, and it doesn't create a bunch of ideas about it. You just move your attention to the breath and start. You can count your breath, you can do whatever you want, but just keep your attention resting there on the experience of breath for as long as you can. It won't be very long at first because we're not accustomed to working with our attention in that way. We're not accustomed to the idea that attention seems to go wherever it wants to go. Mm. So that if you start that will be provide the greatest support for the period that follows when things are changing, and it might get pretty crazy too. The other thing I really want you to think about that and try that.
Yeah.
The other thing I would like you to do, if you haven't, is go to the forums. There is so mm-hmm. much material on the forums at our website. They're like nothing that I have seen anywhere on the web. And there are mm-hmm. people who are many of them, all of them like you and me, and mm-hmm. many of them come from spiritual backgrounds, and many of them come from other backgrounds, and they have some of them have gone completely through what we sometimes call the recovery phase, because we're recovering from this disease that has afflicted us.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are in different, some of them are just beginning. Some of them are have gone through and come out the other end. There are many people that come back again and again to the forums to see the postings there and be helpful to people who are asking for help. And that those forums are a place that I think you'll find yourself at home there. So that's my other advice. Go to the forums at justoneluck.org.
Okay.
I mean, they're really quite fantastic. They're quite not what you'd expect.
Okay, Joel.
Okay?
Yeah, thanks very much.
It's been very good talking with you, Clayton. I'm very happy to have you here. Stay in touch with me, okay?
Okay. Thanks, John.
Okay. Well, that was good. we got 5 minutes more if anybody has something quick they want to say. Well, Mike, it's good to see you show up here. Unfortunately, you're an hour late, and I'm getting ready to close this meeting. But I'm always happy to see you show up. Anything in particular you want to say before we shut this down? Okay, then. Okay, we're going to go. Mike, I wish we had wish you had been here. It was a good meeting. Stay in touch. The meetings are at 11, I think, not 11 Pacific Daylight Time. So I'm going to go. Please stick around for a minute. Carla has some things that she needs to tell you about, and I'll see you next time. Thank you very much. Bye.
Just listen to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on May 8, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneluck.org.